Welcome to the JACCP podcast. My name is Jerry Bauman, and I'm the editor of the Journal of the American College of Clinical Pharmacy. Today, we're talking with Dr. Jory May. Dr. May is assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Hematology and Oncology at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. She is a hematologist that focuses on the care of patients with thrombosis and coagulation disorders. Dr. May was the lead author of a multidisciplinary team of authors for the manuscript entitled Securing Administrative Leadership Commitment for Anticoagulation Stewardship Programs. This manuscript was published in the April 2024 issue of JACCP. Dr. May, thanks for joining us today and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So to begin, in your paper, you and your co-authors drew analogies between anticoagulation stewardship and the more widely implemented antimicrobial stewardship programs. What is the aim of anticoagulation stewardship, and why do health systems need to adopt this approach?
So we know that anticoagulants are widely used and that they're a medication that's associated with risk. There is an important effect of anticoagulation in thrombosis prevention, but at the same time, the potential for bleeding is there. And so what we know from available data is that as much as we like to depend on individual providers to make those right clinical decisions about anticoagulation management for patients, the best way to ensure consistent, evidence-based, high-quality care is really having our health systems built in order to support providers in those decisions. And I think antimicrobial stewardship has shown us a nice example of how when we devote resources to building systems to appropriately use medications, that those systems can be very successful. And so we're hoping that anticoagulation stewardship can follow along that line and feel strongly that anticoagulation is a medication that, because of its risks and also because of the important benefits when used correctly, really requires this degree of attention and resource investment.
So you make a great case for an organized approach to convince C-suite administrators to support anticoagulation stewardship programs. And you commit resources in four phases prior to implementation. Perhaps for the listeners, you could take the four phases and summarize the important elements of each. And let's begin with phase one, which is entitled Building the Foundation.
Sure. Well, and before jumping in, I will add that this was really a collaborative approach of people who have tried to build these programs and what we've figured out along the way. Also trying to build from the literature on institutions that have built these programs, including those that have built antimicrobial stewardship programs. So not that there's an 100% right way to do this, but what we wanted to do was create a framework that someone could hopefully take to their institution and something to guide them along their process. So you highlighted the first phase, which we called building the foundation. And this we saw as kind of a mix of a couple of different things. First, really understanding anticoagulation use at that given institution or health system. So conducting some sort of gap analysis. Where are the problems? Where are things going well? The second piece of that, we talked about the importance of understanding existing committee structures and functions. So who is involved in anticoagulation management? What groups influence those clinical decisions? What groups would be involved in deciding if a program like this should be built or should exist? So really understanding the landscape within the institution itself. And then we also recommended performing a literature search, because I alluded to this briefly, but anticoagulation stewardship programs have been built at other places and they have published their successes. And so helpful when we can learn from other institutions that have implemented these programs and incorporate that into this foundation that we build in the first phase.
So the second phase is selecting the specific stewardship initiatives. Perhaps you could summarize.
Yeah. So selecting initiatives is crucial, right? I think as providers, we may want to fix everything all at once, but that's not feasible. We have kind of limited resources, limited bandwidth. And so really working to understand the potential initiatives and selecting the ones that are going to be highest impact, provide you with the data to support the benefit of what you're doing, can be really helpful. So what we recommended thinking about is, as you're trying to select that initiative, trying to solicit organizational perspectives. So building on that foundation in those groups that you found are active in anticoagulation, what do others think that anticoagulation stewardship should focus on? What are the areas of concern for the providers? And then once we collect a group of different initiatives, a group of options, we evaluate them against each other, perform something like a SWOT analysis, look at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities that may exist within that individual group or within for that individual initiative, and compare it to others so that ultimately we're leaving that phase with a prioritized list of interventions that could be helpful. It sounds a little bit abstract when we're talking about initiatives, so it might be worth mentioning when we think about initiatives, we're thinking about focusing on specific anticoagulants. So maybe one thing that shows up pretty frequently is the use of intravenous direct thrombin inhibitors, bivalirudin and argatroban, that are commonly used in people with heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. There's been successful programs that focus on those agents, optimizing use, ensuring that they're appropriately used. That would be one potential initiative. Other things might be looking at the co-prescription of anticoagulations with aspirin. Is that aspirin indicated? Are there opportunities to deprescribe aspirin? So again, looking at these specific clinical scenarios where there might be need within the institution and figuring out which might be best to focus on first.
I think you mentioned in this category the importance of developing partners and the stakeholders in the program. And I would say, in my experience, that is a crucial thing in trying to justify programs and get additional positions with administrators. I've only been successful when I've partnered with particularly physician colleagues, but others also.
Absolutely. Thank you for highlighting that. I think that's what I enjoy so much about anticoagulation stewardship and this work going into this paper is that it really is multidisciplinary if it's going to be successful. So at my institution, I have fantastic partners in pharmacy. I have partners in other specialties because, you know, anticoagulation really touches every corner of the health system. So I think it makes sense that we need to involve stakeholders. We need to have partners in this in order for it to be successful and for us to fully understand, you know, how we can reach all parts of the institution with any sort of effort.
That's a great point. And then the third phase was to develop implementation plans.
Right. So as much as we all have an idea and we just want to start doing it, being deliberate about developing a plan is really important. And so there is a breadth of data in the quality improvement space on how to develop interventions. And I think it's important that we follow some sort of framework in order to do that. We recommend working with quality groups within your institution to better understand if there's certain quality improvement frameworks or certain approaches that are typically recommended within the institution. Sometimes those might be a preferred method, but that ultimately there's a lot of effort put in to planning the intervention before actually starting it. So as we mentioned before, having the right stakeholders, is it going to involve using the electronic medical record? Is it going to involve certain permissions for different providers that are maybe functioning in a different role that they were functioning in before? All of these things need to be thought about in detail in order to anticipate any issues and in order to make sure that the implementation process is as smooth as possible. But also part of that is the plan to assess whatever implementation is being made. So in quality improvement, we often talk about that PDSA cycle, the plan, do, study, and act. And all of those things should be done in sequence and continuous. So if you're planning an intervention, you also want to be planning how you're going to evaluate whether it's successful or not. And then with a plan to reassess if you need to make adjustments based on those results.
So great. And then the last phase, phase four, is to prepare and present a business plan, I imagine, to the administrators or the people who are deciding on this proposal.
Yeah, that's right. So I think for me as a clinician, this was the most foreign piece of this process. You know, I've, you know, functioned in the clinical space. So the idea of anything business related seems very intimidating and very foreign. And so that was really the impetus for creating this manuscript, is recognizing how can we help equip clinicians to speak the language of those making decisions about funding and support in order to justify what we feel is clinically necessary. So developing a business plan is really making the case to the institution that investing in an anticoagulation stewardship program is beneficial for the institution. As much as we don't like to think about financial considerations in our clinical care, that's what administrators have to think about. There are many ways that they can invest resources. And so what we are trying to do is figure out how we can convince them that investing those resources in anticoagulation stewardship is beneficial. This can be particularly hard because anticoagulation stewardship isn't necessarily highly profitable. There are certainly ways, and we talk about, you know, opportunities that these programs can provide financial benefit for the institution, but a lot of what this is prevention. It's not necessarily bringing in funds. It's preventing things from happening or being stewards of resources. And so that can be a difficult plan to put together and a difficult business case to make. But we provide some resources on how to do that, provide some references to institutions that have done that successfully and built such business plans, and provide just an outline of some of the terminology that you might consider in conversations with leaders at the institution, what those different leadership positions are within the institution. Again, with the goal of providing readers with the tools that they might need to write that business plan themselves.
Prevention, I agree with you, is a hard sell sometimes.
Yeah.
It's hard to see down the road what you're preventing and the sort of financial benefit of that. And I think you do, for the listeners, cite Dr. Schumann's book on how to prepare a business plan. So I think that's...
Yes. Well, I think that's, I would like to highlight that resource. It's really a fantastic and one, you know, that I've used. And I think importantly, developing a business plan is not something that's specific to anticoagulation stewardship. This is the language of the business of healthcare administration. And so using those general tools that already exist are extremely helpful.
You also mentioned the importance of understanding the various contractual arrangements between the health system and the payers and why that can be important in formulating this argument to fund or to support the program.
Yes. I think that, again, this is an area that, at least for me as a clinician, feels uncomfortable, feels out of my knowledge base. But what we know is that financial concerns are a major driver of decisions in healthcare systems. And individual healthcare systems have different payer mix, so different insurance payers. They participate in different programs we call value-based payment programs. So compensation may be adjusted based on certain value metrics. And so understanding which of those things are at play at your institution is helpful because it allows you to understand how to accomplish what you clinically want to accomplish while also understanding the financial incentives that the administrators are having to deal with. And so I think taking the time to learn that vocabulary to a certain extent and understand how your institution is making financial decisions just empowers you to advocate for what makes the most clinical sense.
So I mentioned that I've had some success in justifying programs such as the one here, but I've also failed a number of times. Uh-huh. And so what would you say would be the major barriers to a successful program for anticoagulation stewardship?
Well, you know, again, I can speak from my experience, and I would love to hear about yours, but I think, you know, some examples that, you know, I've run across and mistakes that I've made is starting too big. So I think one of the things that we try to emphasize is starting with a small and accomplishable, even a pilot project that can accomplish something, demonstrate benefit, really show an institution that investing in this has meaning can be helpful. Because if we take off more than we can handle, we aren't able to maybe demonstrate that benefit. A project can stall and not make progress, and that's not what our leaders are going to be looking for. I think the other thing is not taking the time to fully understand the landscape. I think we've touched on this, that, you know, really understanding what's happening at the institution, what are the financial motivators thinking about all of these things before jumping in and trying to change something is really important, because you may start down a path of trying to change something, and then if you didn't do the necessary background work, you may realize you're going in the completely wrong direction. So being very deliberate about that fact-finding phase, I think, is really important.
I think I've made all those mistakes. I think starting too big is a very common one. Mm-hmm. Like you said in the beginning, if you start with a small program and it becomes successful, it can grow, I think. And so I think that's a common mistake. Also, I simply think that if I'd had more a systematic approach, mm-hmm. like you are outlining in this paper, I think I would have been more successful than just trying to use my personality to convince an administrator that this is the sure. right thing, and some literature to back it up. But
sure. That was really the impetus for this paper, because yeah. you will see, you know, the authors are people who have built, you know, programs like this at their institutions and had the similar failures that we've all had. And so forcing us to kind of get together, put our heads together of, you know, if we build a framework, what does that look like? And how can this, you know, be accomplished? And I think the other piece of it is that, you know, hopefully this is something that continues to gain traction and ideally is not every institution having to battle to show the benefit of anticoagulation stewardship. You know, yeah. the hope is that this is something that gains national attention, that ultimately is an expected requirement for institutions to build stewardship programs around anticoagulation, just as it has happened for antimicrobial stewardship programs.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great point.
Right.
Now, antimicrobial stewardship programs are sort of the standard of care.
Exactly. And so, and that in itself allows these providers to do that work that's so important without having to think so much about developing this business plan when it becomes a requirement. But I think for now, this is the reality that we have. And hopefully the continued success of these programs will continue to help make the broader business case for, you know, this to become an expectation for institutions.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you very much again, Dr. May, for contributing this paper. I think our listeners will find it very valuable in their own institutions in trying to justify a program such as this one. So thanks again.
Well, thank you. This was really a pleasure. I appreciate it.